the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was hungry. The tempter approached and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become loaves of bread." He said in reply, "It is written, one does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes forth from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and made him stand on the parapet of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and with their hands they will support you, lest you dash your foot against a stone." Jesus answered him, "Again it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test." The devil then took him up to a very high mountain and showed him all of the kingdoms of the world in their magnificence. And he said to him, "All these I shall give to you if you will prostrate yourself and worship me." At this, Jesus said to him, "Get away, Satan. It is written, the Lord your God shall you worship, and him alone shall you serve." Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him. The Gospel of the Lord.
So, I thought today that we would start with a quiz, just to see if you've been paying attention. Put your books away, put your notes away. You ready? Last Sunday, the seventh Sunday in ordinary time, it was. What were the last words that we heard Jesus say in the gospel? That would probably be a tough question. I'll give you a little bit of a hint. If you're going to remember them, it's because they were so shocking. Anybody? Yeah? Jesus said, "Be perfect, just as your heavenly Father is perfect." Those are shocking words. You will often hear people say in response, "Oh, he's speaking parabolically there. He can't possibly mean that." Guess what? He means it. He means it. Later on, he'll say that for us, humanly, this is impossible, but tell us that with God, all things are possible. But make no mistake about it. Jesus is telling us that we must do something that's impossible, humanly impossible, perfection. You must become perfect. Now, Jesus just doesn't say, "Be perfect," and then say, "Okay, see you later, have a nice day." He tells us how to become perfect, and he also shows us what it means to be perfect through his actions. He tells us, for example, how to be perfect in the Beatitudes, which we heard recently. The Beatitudes, which the church calls the heart of the teaching of Jesus, the heart of his teaching. St. Augustine goes on to call the Beatitudes the model for living the perfect Christian life. But Jesus also shows us by example One example or examples of which we heard about today in the response of Jesus to the devil's three temptations. The first temptation, the devil tempts Jesus to turn stones into loaves of bread. Jesus was fasting 40 days and 40 nights, and so he was hungry. And the devil tempts him, "Well, if you are the Son of God, change those stones into bread and eat your fill. Don't be hungry." Now, there is nothing wrong with eating bread, especially if you're hungry. But there is something wrong with eating if you have committed yourself to fast. In another temptation, the devil takes Jesus to a high mountain, and he shows him all the kingdoms of the world and all their glory and all their glitter. And he says to him, "I'll give these to you if all you do is worship me." Now, you know, you might ask, does the devil even have these things to give? Well, in Luke's version of the temptation in the desert, it says that all these kingdoms have been given to the devil, and he can give them to whoever he wills. So, in that sense, then yes, the devil is the prince of the world. Jesus even calls him that at other places in the gospel. So the devil is essentially saying, "Now I could give you all the kingdoms of the world. All you have to do is worship me." Now, why is this a temptation for Jesus? Well, ask yourself, why did Jesus come into the world? He came to win back these nations of the world from the power of the devil. So Satan is saying to Jesus, "You can have them all right now. No problem. There's just one catch. You have to bow down before me and you have to worship me." In other words, you can have what you came for right now without the cross. Without the cross. You won't have to go to Calvary. You won't have to suffer. All you need to do is worship me. So the temptation is to avoid the cross and win the world, but without the suffering. And then in a third temptation, the devil takes Jesus to the pinnacle of the temple. And he says, "If you really are the Son of God, throw yourself down, because God will have his angels catch you and take care of you." In other words, you know, if you really are the Son of God, then prove it. Just prove it. Go to the temple where everybody can see you. Throw yourself off and let everybody see your power. Let everybody see the angels catch you. Then they'll believe who you say you are. The devil is trying to get Jesus to commit the sin of pride by having him use his powers in a fancy display, a powerful display, for himself. So the world could see that he is who he says he is. Those are the three temptations that Jesus faced. And it's interesting to contrast those three temptations of Jesus with the three temptations of Adam and Eve that we heard about in the book of from the book of Genesis, which was our first reading for today. You know, when we hear that story of the fall of Adam and Eve, it's so easy for us to get caught up in the drama of the situation and the drama of the details that we miss the reasons for their fall. We read in Genesis that the woman, later to be called Eve, the woman saw that the forbidden fruit was good for food, a delight to the eyes, and desirable to make one wise. Those are the three reasons. Ancient Jews recognized from way back that those three reasons, good for food, a delight to the eyes, and desirable to make one wise, was the root cause of all sins in the world. Every single sin that you can think of falls into one of those three buckets. In fact, the apostle, St. John, in his letter, the first letter of John, he makes this very, very clear. In his letter, he talks about the triple lust, or a threefold disordered desire. He says, let me just read to you that little bit from the first letter of John. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. Now what's he talking about here? The lust of the flesh that he alludes to, that he talks about, is a disordered desire for pleasure. Like when Eve saw the fruit and saw that it was good for food. That's the lust of the flesh. And it just doesn't have to be food, right? It could be alcohol or gluttony or drug abuse or sexual sins or whatever. Disordered carnal pleasures. It's the devil saying to Jesus, turn these stones into loaves of bread and eat. Even though he made the commitment to fast. So, the lust of the flesh is a disordered carnal desire. A disordered desire for bodily pleasure. The lust of the eyes is when Eve saw that the fruit was not only good for food, but also delight to the eyes, is what Genesis said. It was beautiful to behold, so she wanted to possess it. A disordered desire to possess things. Just like when Satan showed Jesus all the kingdoms of the world and all their splendor and all their glitter, and says, you could have all this right now if only you would worship me. For us, that means a greedy desire to have more and more and more and more. Even to have things that don't belong to us. And then finally, pride. What St. John called the pride of life. Eve took the fruit because it was desirable to make one wise. The devil told her, eat this fruit and you will become like God. The devil told Jesus, if you are the Son of God, if you are who you say you are, prove it to us. Throw yourself off in the temple and let everybody see the angels rescue you. Notice how this is the same temptation that Jesus received when he hung on the cross. All the crowds were shouting, if you are who you say you are, prove it. Come down from that cross. For us, pride means we think we know better than God. Pride is really the root of all sin, because every sin can be described as a disordered self-love. Disordered self-love. A desire to be number one, even if it means putting God in last place. In all three instances, Jesus, the new Adam, succeeded where the first Adam failed. But what does this have to do with us being perfect? Well, Jesus told us that too. You were here somewhere, maybe here or elsewhere, on Ash Wednesday. You remember the gospel from Ash Wednesday? In that gospel, Jesus gives us the antidote for this threefold lust. For lust of the flesh, the antidote is fasting. Fasting. Do you struggle with things like, you know, gluttony, alcoholism, drug abuse, pornography, adultery, or whatever? Disordered attraction to some sort of bodily pleasure. Jesus tells us that fasting is the antidote to that. Deny yourself, deny your body, and you will achieve mastery over your body, is what he's saying. Fasting puts to death that disordered inclination for pleasure. Big problem today. The lust of the eyes. For that, Jesus tells us the antidote is almsgiving. You, like me, sometimes tend to find yourself getting a little greedy. You find yourself sometimes not satisfied with what you have, and you want more and more and more and more. And you want to, how can I get this? How can I get this? You want to overcome that? Give your money away. Give your things away. Give your stuff away. Use it to help the poor. That's almsgiving. Almsgiving will put to death that disordered inclination to possess everything that you see and want. And then finally, pride. That's the sin of sins. And the antidote for that, Jesus tells us, is prayer. When you pray, you humble yourself. You go to your knees and acknowledge that I'm coming before you, God, because I need you and I am not God. Pride means doing whatever it is you want to do whenever you want to do it. And prayer is a poison, a deadly poison for pride. Prayer kills pride at its roots. Prayer is what enables you to say, "Thy will be done." Jesus tells us that we must be perfect, and he means it. Make no mistake about that. But he also gives us the necessary way to perfection by word and example. Prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. It purifies your heart. It allows you to sincerely say what St. Paul said in Galatians when he said, "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live. It's Christ living within me." It enables you to die to yourself, to give of yourself as Jesus gave of himself through sacrificial acts of mortification, such as prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. It enables us to say, "It is no longer I who live. It is Christ living in me." Christ living in me. Christ living in you. That's perfection. That's what Jesus calls us to when he says, be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect.